Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Talking the Cure, Hogan Lovers Life Sciences and Healthcare Podcast. Today, Jane Summerfield and Owen Robinson discuss UK medical device regulation, focusing on the regulatory roadmap published by the MHRA, its implication for businesses, and the process for legislation development. They highlight the delay in core regulation target dates, the importance of stakeholder consultation, and potential impacts of the upcoming general election on the roadmap's timeline and policy direction. I'm going to hand over to Jane Summerfield, as she's going to lead on the conversation.
So hello, I'm Jane Summerfield. I'm a life sciences partner here in our London office.
And I'm Owen Robinson. I'm a legal director in our public law and policy team.
So today we're going to talk about medical device regulation in the UK. So we thought we'd start today by talking about the regulatory roadmap that's been published by the MHRA earlier this year. The roadmap essentially sets out what has happened to date in terms of changing medical device regulation in the UK and also the future developments over the next couple of years. We thought we'd talk through that together, talk about the process in terms of how legislation will be developed and change, and there's some related developments around that and how things may play out over the next couple of years. So in terms of the roadmap, there's a number of interesting points that are raised and activities there. Owen, it'd be interesting to hear your views on some of the pieces around consultation, for example.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that the target date for the core regulations is now sometime in 2025, which is a delay from the previous target commencement dates of July 23 and then July 24. So there's obviously a bit of uncertainty for business there in terms of that sort of slightly moving target. But what I think is interesting is that the roadmap seems to be, well, the MHRA are at pains to make provision for extensive stakeholder discussions throughout 2024 on some of the key topics. And it's interesting that because there was obviously a very wide-ranging public consultation, albeit 3 years ago now, and it's not clear if this stakeholder engagement is actually going to be sort of further formal consultation. And the reason why that matters is because the Medicines and Medical Devices Act requires public consultation before legislation can be made. So if the stakeholder engagement is to radically alter the policy, then there's an argument that the ministers wouldn't have the powers to make those regulations because they'd need to be subject to public consultation and not just sort of targeted stakeholder engagement. But of course, if the policy ends up staying the same as a result of that engagement, then there won't be any issues.
In terms of how does that engagement then work, and how do you move from engagement to policy through to legislation? What's the process and what's the timing?
So normally, in an ideal world, you would have sort of 12 weeks of a public consultation, which there was in this case. The government then publishes its response to that consultation. And, lawyers, so I used to be a lawyer in government and drafted legislation. And, lawyers would often have a sort of watching brief really up until this point. And once the government has published its response to the consultation, that's when drafting can start. And it's very much an iterative process whereby lawyers and policy officials will throw drafts back and forward until there's a settled draft. But one of the interesting aspects of this process is that there, into the timetable, there needs to be built time for 60 days of engagement with the WTO. So that's, just leads to further delays in the process because you've got consultation, you've got the drafting time, you've got the WTO process. And then these regulations that will amend the UK MDR are also subject to what's called affirmative resolution procedure, which means that there needs to be a debate in both Houses of Parliament, so in the Commons and the Lords. So again, that needs to be built into the timetable. So it's, you're looking at the best part of a year, really, when you're talking about the full timing from consultation through drafting, through WTO and through Parliament.
So that then explains, in terms of the roadmap, for everything's very much shifted into 2024 in terms of those different parts of regulation. So things around central requirements, around clinical investigations, looking at the international recognition procedure as well, for example, which will be an interesting development for the UK, potentially recognising devices that have been approved in other markets. All of that on the roadmap is very much pushed into 2024, developing the content, the policy, the legislation, with the core regulations intended to be published by the end of 2024. So that then ties into why the roadmap looks very much front-loaded, but actually it's to allow that time in 2025 for that process to take place.
Exactly, yeah. And, there's also, we still need to see what impact the separate IBD roadmap might have on all of this as well, because that's being treated separately.
So one of the other interesting points on timing in the roadmap is in the key box, there's a note about the general election coming up and that the timeline in the roadmap doesn't take into account any impact of the general election. In terms of what that impact might be, what do you think, Owen, in terms of how it might possibly change direction, change timing? How could you see that playing out?
So I think what's interesting about the MHRA, just taking a step back a moment, is that it's operationally independent, and that's not statutorily independent. So it's answerable to ministers, but it has its own leadership. But there is likely to be, and most likely, if you believe the polls, likely to be a Labour administration coming in. There'll be new ministers in within the next 12 months. And so what happens when there's a change of government is that civil servants will be preparing briefing packs for new ministers on everything within their sort of policy remit. And that will include where the MHRA has got to with medical devices reform post-Brexit. And I'm not saying it's likely, but it's possible and it can't be ruled out that new ministers with a fresh perspective may want to revisit some of the decisions that have already been made. So we're in the realms of speculation, but I think it's likely that most ministers won't want to radically alter the roadmap too much on medical devices, given it's already been consulted on. There's largely buy-in from stakeholders and industry, and it represents pretty close alignment to the previous EU position. So I don't think, a Labour administration would be more keen on, seizing Brexit opportunities by diverging radically than the Conservatives have been.
Do you think it could potentially have nuances, I suppose, in a more subtle way in terms of whereas at the moment a number of elements, so there will obviously be changes through statutory instruments, but there are a number of changes coming from MHRA as well that will be in the form of guidance. So for example, as part of the software and AI as a medical device change program, many of the work packages there are intended to be guidance documents. Mm-hmm. And for example, new initiatives such as the IDAP, so the Innovative Devices Access Pathway, at the moment, again, is on a guidance basis. It's on a published information by the MHRA, but not statutory basis. Do you think that could shift as a result of an administration change? Could there be a difference in approach from that perspective?
I think that is likely because, we know that sort of historically, Labour administrations have been more keen on regulation and guidance and being more prescriptive, perhaps, than the Conservative Party have been. So I think that wouldn't surprise me at all if that's one of the implications of a new Labour government coming in.
There would be parallels there to other things we see, for example, with the MHRA on medicines. If you take something like the Early Access to Medicine Scheme, EAMS was initially a pilot. It was something that was in guidance for a long time and then has now been put on a statutory basis. So there is already precedent there from the MHRA's perspective to start to move things from guidance stage into a statutory footing.
So although I've said that I don't think the essential components of the roadmap will change if there is a Labour administration coming in, one of the things that may is the dates. We know from experience that the dates on this reform programme have shifted into the future. But at the moment, we're still looking at 2028 or 2030 in terms of continued recognition of CE marked devices. But I think it needs to be very much watch this space in terms of how the dates on the roadmap may be impacted by the general election.
So one of the other recent developments in relation to UK medical device regulation and the framework here is around approved bodies. There has, until very recently, only been a very limited number of approved bodies, but that has changed and their groupings now coming together as to how those approved bodies will interact with the MHRA. And can you tell us a little bit more about what's happened there and what we're seeing?
Yes, I think it's interesting that, for quite a long time, there were only, I think, four approved bodies. These are organizations designated by the MHRA as having the necessary capabilities to assess whether manufacturers and the medical devices meet the requirements of the UK MDR. But there were, I think, three more were announced in the second half of last year, and then two more were announced in January. So now, I think there are nine approved bodies now, which is, good news for the industry. And it was also interesting to see at the tail end of 2023, the creation of what's been called Team AB, which is a collaborative forum for all the approved bodies to work together, share best practice and speak with one voice when they're engaging with the MHRA, with industry and with stakeholders. So I think that's, a good news story. What are you hearing from clients in terms of the latest news on approved body capacity?
The clients are, I think, obviously pleased by the additional capacity. I've seen many of the interactions we have around UKCA marking at the moment and projects that the companies are working on often actually relate to software and still class one software. So I think the relevance of the approved bodies in that sense, the increased capacity will only grow over time as companies look to you to work the approved bodies on devices that are a higher class and therefore need approved body interactions, but also as the regulatory regime shifts from the transitional period into ultimately the UK framework as it will be set going forward. I think that will become of even more importance going forward than perhaps we're seeing at the moment. So one other development, Owen, that caught my eye recently was a letter that was sent by government to the MHRA, asking the MHRA to set out how it intends to interpret and apply principles that have been set out in the AI regulation white paper. So this is essentially an industry agnostic government position, which sets out the five key principles as a framework for AI regulation. And the government's writing to different key regulators, including the MHRA, asking how that's actually going to work in practice, so how they will take that into account within their sphere. So for the MHRA, for example, they have been asked to set out their strategic approach to AI in the context of both medical devices and medicines by the end of April. And that ties in, obviously, very closely with what we're talking about on medical device regulation and change, because a number of the areas where the UK framework, and mainly in the softer sense in terms of guidance, will change will be around software as a medical device and AI specifically as a medical device, and the guidance that is intended to come out of the software and AI as a medical device change program. There will be packages of work coming out which essentially will help or intended to help business to understand how the requirements within the medical device framework apply to innovative, rapidly changing products such as AI as a medical device, is to actually help companies understand how do we take a framework that is very wide and applies to a huge range of different products, and how do we apply that specifically to AI. So I think given the timing of that response due at the end of April, I think it would be reasonable to expect we will then see more coming out of the MHRA shortly after in terms of both those guidance documents from the Medical Device Change Programme starting to come up again, but also the AI Airlock, which is an initiative the MHRA put together and are inviting applications for currently, which essentially is a regulatory sandbox, which will enable certain companies to test out innovative devices within the NHS. And what's particularly interesting about it is it brings together the NHS and the MHRA and NICE and other interest bodies all along the pathway from clinical investigations through regulation, commercialization to market access. It brings all those bodies together at the beginning of the process to set out a plan for each product as to how the product will move through that pathway, so how it will go from being tested in an NHS setting through to ultimately having access within the NHS. So I think that will tie together, and we'll see probably quite a flurry of activity most likely once that position has been set out at the end of April. And that ties in with the timing, the roadmap, coming back to our original point around the roadmap, timing in there for the AI Airlock initiative, which is expected to be Q2 2024. So we could see quite a bit of movement, particularly on the AI front before the summer, I think.
Yeah, and it's obviously a very evolving picture. I mean, I think the MHRA have been running their AI change program for 3 or 4 years, and you know, they've been working with the FDA and Health Canada on good machine learning principles. I suppose what's interesting as well is, because just going back to the political context, what Labour are saying in relation to AI, you know, they want to set up a regulatory innovation office, which is going to be a pro-innovation body to try and expedite regulatory decisions. And just this month, they've announced plans to move from a voluntary code to a statutory code when it comes to working on an AI technology and acquiring test data to be released. So it's an emerging picture, not just, you know, AI globally, but also the, as I say, the political context in the UK.
So then there's one final question for you, Owen, which is something that ties in actually with change that's already happened, and how that then may also play out in future with the changes to the medical device regulation coming through. But the powers under the current legislation, can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, so the MHRA were given pretty extensive and wide-ranging powers under the Medicines and Medical Devices Act 2021, which, you know, have been enforced for a couple of years now. And, you know, these are powers to issue compliance notices, suspension notices, safety notices, and so on. Very clearly drafted and as I say, quite wide-ranging powers that we're just not really seeing them being used in practice, which I think is interesting in itself. The MHRA tend to rely more on national patient safety alerts, which is historically what they've done. But so I find it interesting that, you know, Parliament gave the MHRA these broad powers, and they're not so far really making use of them. I don't know what you're seeing from your side, Jane.
That ties in with what I'm seeing. Hopefully, in many ways, that's because companies are generally cooperating with the MHRA, working together with them. They are generally a very collaborative regulator, and so perhaps that partly stems from a lack of need to do so. But I agree, there was, as a lawyer in the area, it was very interesting seeing that increase in power and the ability, and whether those powers would be flexed by the MHRA. But actually, in practice, and that may obviously change once the new regulations are in. Although typically, when you have a change in legislation, there's also tolerance for some time as companies get used to the new requirements. But that very much ties in with what we're seeing in practice over the last few years, that there hasn't been a sudden increase in enforcement notices or statutory powers being used in that way. The MHRA continues to take a very pragmatic approach and work with companies towards compliance. So I think we'll leave it there for today. Thank you very much, Owen, for chatting with me.
Thank you.
Pleasure. And if there are any questions or topics that have arisen in your mind while listening to us, then please do feel free to reach out. We'd be very happy to speak with you.
That's it for today. If you have further questions for Jane and or Owen, you can find their contacts in the show notes. In addition, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you're not going to miss out on any future episodes. Give us a 5-star rating, follow us on LinkedIn as we're sharing a lot of interesting content there. So let's close this out. Thank you for joining. See you in about 2 weeks when we're talking The Cure.